Hello, and welcome to Endeavors, broadcasting to you from wherever you are, wherever you may be going, or wherever you may have been. My name is Dan, and I'll guide you through this next little while of fanciful tales and beautiful words. Happy New Year to all. Hope the holidays treated you well. You're stuffed and you're back to work, aren't we all? Yes, yes, yes. Both of the interviews on today's show actually took place before the holidays. At the end of December, I spoke with actor John Emmett Tracy, who is in a new theater production called The Rivals, which is a play by Sheridan. It's very, very, very Edwardian farce, I would like to say. I had a chance to see it that night, too. You can check out my blog, wildthing.org, for the review. Vancouver bears its rivalry. And you'll also be hearing from an older interview that I did back in October, November with a group called Taco Cat. They are from L.A., and I would sort of describe their music as, like, kind of surf rock, but it's a little more satirical than that. I mean, they've got songs called Hey Girl, which supposedly was named after the Ryan Gosling meme of Hey Girl. And just, which is the name, like, Taco Cat, like, how serious are you going to take them? But they're a really fun group of guys and gals. So you're going to be hearing from them. And we have a lot of music guests coming up in the next coming weeks. So many that I don't know what to do with. Tia Bradza, JD McPherson, Vance Joy, Vanessa Carlton, Old Man Canyon, and then we got the Nylons coming up beginning of February, Room Full of Teeth, Car Seat Headrests, Shiloh Lindsay, Unknown Mortal Orchestra, Magical Clouds. I went a little overboard. But anyway, stay tuned for those in the coming weeks. Right now, you're going to hear a song from Taco Cat. This is their song, Crimson Wave. My first guest is an actor who has been in the business for nearly 40 years. over that time, he has appeared in a wide array of impressive film, television, and theater productions. To name a few, he's appeared in Motive, Olympus, The Haunting Hour, The Killing, Continuum, Flowers in the Attic, Cedar Cove, American Mary, Fairly Legal, Assassin's Creed 3, Fringe, Psych, Sanctuary, Smallville, Supernatural, Always a Bridesmaid, Impact, and Terminal City, as well as the movies including If I Stay and American Mary. He also has a wide array of theater credits, including performing at the renowned Globe Theatre in England and being in a touring production of Hamlet in Tokyo. He's in a new play now in Vancouver, Richard Brinsley Sheridan's The Rivals, which is an Edwardian farce, in the vein of Oscar Wilde, though it predates him by about 100 years. He is John Emmett Tracy, and I got to speak with him last week.
I am joined on the phone by actor John Emmett Tracy. John, hello, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan, how are you?
Good, how are you doing?
Great, thanks for having me.
Well, tonight is opening night for you guys, for The Rivals. I know you've obviously been rehearsing for a while, and you had a couple of preview performances the last couple of days. But what is opening night? What does that mean for you?
Oh, that's a great question. It's funny because, you know, as many years as I've been doing this, opening night always, you know, it always comes with this incredible amount of excitement and energy. Sometimes you rehearse a play for as short as 2 weeks, and sometimes you get 4, maybe 5 weeks. But you always feel like you'd like more time to work it, but at the same time you get to the place where you think, nope, it's ready for an audience to see it, and I think that's where we are.
Is it a good thing as an actor to always be a little bit nervous, always have a small amount of trepidation before you go on stage?
Yeah, I think every actor would probably answer that question slightly differently. I think some actors thrive on sort of nerves, or others kind of maybe channel that into what they think of as energy. I think that's what I do. I think of it as kind of an energy impulse that makes me excited to get out there and sort of tell the story. But I think it's good to keep a bit of an edge that sort of keeps you on your toes. And it also, I think, Dan, that's the thing that makes you connect best with the audience, when you're really on your toes and kind of receptive to what's happening with them.
Now, this is a pretty intense play. It's almost 2.5 hours long. I mean, even for a movie, that's tough. But doing a 2.5 hour live show every day can really put a strain on the actor, both physically and emotionally. How do you keep yourself ready to go each night to perform a piece of such a scale?
Oh, yeah, well, you know, you're right. We've had a couple of illnesses throughout rehearsal, getting ready for the piece. I'm actually my voice is a little on edge today. It's been a long rehearsal process, and we've been putting in some long days. But how do I keep myself ready to go? Well, I think like every actor, I've got my own sort of rituals and pre-show methods of relaxation and preparation. But I think the main thing is, for most actors, when you start telling the story, you're really trying to focus on what the character is going through, and you're and connecting to the other, you know, to the other person, the other character or characters in the scene. So it's funny, I find that regardless of where I'm at physically or emotionally or mentally, if I throw myself into the story and connect with the actors and try to engage the audience, well, then I don't know. I somehow find that my own personal state of being doesn't come into it quite as much as it might, you know?
For those not in the know, how would you break down what The Rivals is about?
Ah, yeah. Well, it's funny because, you know, people know of the playwright Sheridan. Many do. Richard Brinsley Sheridan was well known for a play called School for Scandal. But it's not as though he's a household name, you know, or that this is a play that everybody, you know, sort of studies in school or something like that. So, you know, when people come in, what's kind of nice about this is there's a bit of a blank canvas. You know, they're not really coming in with any expectations of what this play means. But having said that, I can tell you that it is funny. It is wacky. There's lots and lots of humor in it, and lots of lighthearted satire of kind of human foibles. I don't want to say that there's, you know, a message in it, because that sort of gives the wrong idea. But there definitely is an idea of how we humans behave when we present ourselves to each other, especially in love. Sometimes we bring a version of ourselves rather than the full truth of ourselves at the beginning of a relationship. So in a nutshell, it's a story of several love pairings, which go through lots of different crazy ins and outs, as love does, and mistaken identity, and essentially people bringing maybe a somewhat false version of themselves to the relationship, and in some cases in this play an incredibly false version, you know, double identities and mixed up, and the letter doesn't arrive and people get confused, and so far audiences have been laughing quite a bit, so I think people will really enjoy it.
You know, throughout all the history of performing and acting in stage play, love seems to be probably the most common element or theme that just runs throughout art in general, I would say. What is it about love that you think that makes for such good storytelling?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, this play was written in, I think, 1773 or 4. The playwright was only 23 at the time. And it's funny when you work on plays from such a long time ago, or even further back, when you work on Shakespeare or the Greek plays, you realize that in so many ways we haven't changed at all, you know? And I think love is that universal thing, you know, that this pairing up business that we do, it's something that humans do, and it's one of the most complex and difficult things, but it's the most rewarding and joyful thing. So I think, like, audiences, for example, when they come to see The Rivals, you might not have been in the experience where you pretend to be somebody else as you're, you know, courting someone, but you can identify with, you know, this idea that, well, maybe I'm not presenting my full true self, or maybe I found myself caught up in a little, a little issue that I can't get out of because I might have represented it wrong in the first place. So I think love is so universal for us because it's timeless, you know? And I think that's why writers love to, you know, both dramatize it and satirize it, which is what's happening here.
Now, most people might not realize, but you're not originally from Vancouver. You've adopted this city as your hometown. And I'm curious from your perspective, especially coming from such a rich artistic city as Chicago, what you make of the artistic scene within this community, in this city?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great question. Well, the short answer is I love the artistic community in Vancouver. The longer answer is I've been lucky enough to live in a lot of different cities. You know, I was born in Chicago, and I've lived in Los Angeles, and I've lived overseas in various places, and I lived in Milwaukee, and I've lived in Arizona. So I've had the opportunity to, you know, sort of experience the artistic communities in a lot of different places. And I will say this about Vancouver, and this isn't just the theater community, this is the arts community in general. There is such an incredible range and spectrum here. You know, we've got a lot of fantastic underground, homegrown do-it-yourself theater and equity collectives. This would mean groups of artists that get together, and even though they're not getting paid, they decide to pool their resources and create a piece because they care enough about it, all the way up to top-level professional work. So I find the whole thing very exciting, and I know as soon as I moved here, the first play that I went to see was Waiting for Godot, produced by Blackbird Theater, a company that, you know, that is now producing The Rivals, and I was so blown away. I've seen maybe 10 productions of that play. This was by far my favorite, and in my opinion, the best production I've ever seen. And I instantly became a fan of the company. And I might have even written them a little note, a little fan note or something. But I was determined to work with them. And then I having lived here now a few years, I've gone to see so many different things. And I find that we're just spoiled for choice here. There's so much to see and there's so much to do. And so I think we're pretty lucky.
And of course, many people know you from your many appearances in film and TV, whether it's like American Mary or even a web series now, which is the new thing. I know you've done a couple of those. Do you change your approach whether you're live on stage in a theater or whether you're in front of a camera?
Yeah, that's a great question. The emotional approach, I don't change. But the physical approach, absolutely. So I think, you know, for any performer, and I can guess that most people would agree with me on this, who are actors, when you're connecting with another actor and you're trying to tell your character's story, I think at the end of the day, that version of truth is the same thing. You know, I don't really feel like when I'm on stage, oh, now I really feel like I'm emotionally connected and on film, and it's the same. But the physical approach, absolutely. You know, that's a learning curve for any actor. If you're like me and you started on stage, when you first get in front of a camera, there's so many things to learn, and you're working in a very small space. So, you know, the obvious things like you're moving in a much smaller measure, and you're using your voice differently, and you're interacting at much smaller, more subtle levels. But no, I wouldn't say that emotionally there's any difference in terms of connecting with each other.
You mentioned that you've been fortunate to live and work in many theater-centric cities, and I read that you got to perform at the Globe Theatre in London as somewhat of a Britophile. I got to ask you about that experience. That must have been just something, you know, I can't even imagine what that would be like.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked about it, because it really was the highlight of my acting life. I've been an actor since I was a child, a pretty small child. I started back in the Midwest of the United States, and I was very, very early, became a devotee of Shakespeare, and I remember my grandmother getting me the complete works of Shakespeare when I was only, I think, 8 or 9, and I still have that volume. And so when I was a high school student, I won an exchange to London, and I was a student in resident at a school there. And that was the same year they were breaking ground to rebuild Shakespeare's Globe Theater, very close to the original site. It's adjacent. I'm not sure if you've been. Have you seen it in person, Dan?
I've not seen it in person, but I've seen films about the Wanamaker and the recreation and all that.
And the creation of it, exactly.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, he was an American actor who was there, spent basically the last section of his life trying to get this project, created. And so I was there that year when they broke ground to rebuild it. And I remember asking a teacher to take me there. And at the time, it was kind of a dodgy part of London. And I remember her taking me to this site, and it was, you know, kind of bulldozers and earth movers and this kind of thing. And I was, you know, excited. And I was thinking, oh, this is where the audience will be, I bet. And I was trying to sort of imagine it in my mind. But I just sort of had one of those moments, you know, those kind of someday I'll perform here, you know, this kind of thing. And I'm sure she was hoping I'd get back in the car and leave because it was getting dark and it was, you know. So anyways, but it took me, I don't know, maybe 25 years or so. And I did. I got on stage there and I was invited to be part of something called the International Actors Fellowship. It's a way that they can bring actors from around the world together. And they do this about every 2 or 3 years, and they choose, 12 actors from around the world through a series of interviews and auditions and this kind of thing. And it's fantastic. They bring you together, and you spend the summer together working on that stage and creating a piece, bringing all of the working methods that you've grown accustomed to based on wherever you're from. So in other words, we had an actor from Malta, and we had some people from New Zealand and Italy and Australia and, you know, from all, it was really exciting. U.S., Canada, so Norway. You know, it was a phenomenal opportunity to meet with actors from around the world and create a piece of theater together, sharing ideas. And as for the space itself, you know, I just hope, Dan, you get a chance to go because it's the most amazing experience. In fact, when they brought us out onto the stage for the first time, I remember them. They brought us out through the Tiring House, which for the audience listening here, we would think of it as sort of backstage, but it's directly behind the stage, and there's two double doors that open out onto the stage. And as they opened those doors and brought us out, I remember them banging kind of a ceremonial drum slowly, like a doom doom doom. It was, for so many actors, it's kind of a mecca, this theater, this structure, this rare structure. So, and then another thing, if I haven't gone on too long about it, is the theater itself. Performing on that stage is an amazing experience because it's not an outdoor theater. You know, they're very careful to explain this to you. It's an indoor theater without a roof, if that makes any sense. So you feel very enclosed, and the audience is very close, and it's daylight, and you can see everyone, and you can watch their nuances, and you talk directly to them. So it's very different than this kind of what we now think of as a traditional proscenium experience where, you know, the audience is in the dark and we're pretending you're not there, you know, that kind of thing. It was thrilling, beyond thrilling.
While we're on the subject of Shakespeare, didn't you get to play the mother of all Shakespeare roles in a touring production of Hamlet?
I did, yes. I got really, really lucky with that because I had played Hamlet the year prior to that and came to the attention of the director of this Japanese production, who then invited me to come play it there. And so that was fantastic. I mean, it was a 9-month experience all told, and it was a bilingual production. So, you know, they had actors, most of the cast was Japanese, and then they had, I think, maybe 4 or 5 English-speaking actors from Canada and the United States and from England. And for example, I would say a line to Ophelia in English, and she would answer me in Japanese. And so, you know, the audience was, and these were huge 2,000 seat theaters we were in, touring around, you know, basically a truck tour. We had this huge set that we would move from city to city, area to area. And you know, the audience would follow along with books, which was so interesting because it's a very quiet audience in Japan. You know, they don't, there's not a lot of candy wrappers crinkling and that kind of thing. It's to the point where you think, oh, is there anybody out there even? You know, it was so quiet. But then at a certain point, I would hear 2,000 people all turn the page at the exact same time. It was like this sea of pages, you know, turning before me, and you just sort of hold for it. It was really a unique experience, yeah.
And you were fortunate, I believe, in 2013 to win sort of the big Vancouver award in theater here, the Jesse. What can you tell me about that experience? Just, you know, getting that award and being at that ceremony.
Well, you asked earlier about the Vancouver arts community, and I think, you know, one of the first things I said when I stood up there was to thank the Vancouver theater community for you know, sort of welcoming me. That was the first play I'd ever done here, and I don't think anybody in the theater community knew who I was even. You know, when I stood up, they were probably thinking, "Who is this?" Yeah, it was it's wonderful. It's so much fun to be there with people you made the piece with. That play was called Terminus, and the director, Richard Wolff, who's the artistic director of Pi Theater, he hired me even though he didn't know who I was or hadn't seen my work. And I know it's tricky to hire an actor whose track record you're not familiar with. You know, a lot of times people here have very capable and wonderful actors that they've worked with many times, so they understand that they're going to get a great performance from a particular actor. So I was really, really touched that and grateful that he was taking a chance on somebody whose work he didn't know. So I think that in the larger scale, that's kind of how I felt about that night. I felt very grateful and, you know, honored by the community.
Do you have any words of wisdom for actors starting out in the business?
There's so many. There's so many. I suppose if I had the opportunity to say just one thing, it would be about being prepared for the whole picture. You know, it's really nice. I'm getting to chat with you and talk about a lot of the highlights. But, you know, a life as an actor is not always that way. You know, there's years and years. And as I said, I started as a child, and all through my teen years and my 20s, and there's always been so many difficult times where it's sort of, issues like rent and food and how to find work and those kinds of things. I hope it doesn't sound like a downer, but I think it's the full package. You know, you definitely have wonderful, life-changing experiences, but it can be a very tricky life, and it's a bit itinerant. You know, as I said to you, I've lived in a lot of places. A lot of the reason for that is because I followed the work. You know, if there's a work opportunity, you end up going there. And so I would say be prepared for the whole thing. And I think the best way to do that is to try to form, a solid home-based life for yourself. You know, make sure you're taking care of yourself. Make sure you're staying healthy. Make sure you're ready for the long marathon, I guess, is the best way to put it. Because it is really worth it if you love this enough to continue at it for your lifetime, then I can't think of a better way to live a life.
Well, the play is The Rivals, and it opens tonight at the Kulch in Vancouver, and I believe you guys are running through until the 28th?
That's right, until the 28th.
The 28th.
Well, no, excuse me, the 23rd.
23rd. So now,
January 23rd.
Now until January 23rd at the Kulch, the historic theater in East Vancouver. John Emmett Tracy, thank you so much for your time today.
Oh, Dan, thanks a lot. It was fun.
All righty, I'll see you later. Ciao.
Take care.
Yeah!
Well, that was Hey Girl by Taco Cat. And they are a surf pop quartet from Seattle. I misspoke earlier when I said they're from LA. They're from Seattle. Consisting of Emily Noakes, Bree McKenna, Lila Maupin, and Eric Randall. And they're quite funny because they are surf pop, but they talk a lot about feminist themes, and so they subvert a lot of the themes you might hear normally expressed in music of that genre. For example, the song you just heard, "Hey Girl," mocks sort of street harassment and cat calls, and they also have a song that mocks white male anarchists, and they have and "Crimson Wave" is about menstruation. So there you go. I had a chance to talk with the gang from Taco Cat a couple of months back. But before that, you're going to hear another song. This is about waiting for a late bus, and it's called FU Number 8.
I am joined on the phone by Taco Cat. Ladies and gent, hello, welcome.
Hello.
So you guys, I know, are in the midst of a tour with Sally Ford, and you're coming to Vancouver on Saturday. What are you looking forward most to about our city?
Well, to be honest, I don't know that much about Vancouver. I'm looking for, we've never played an actual show there. That's true. We've only played festivals. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the venue's like and what the other bands sound like. And
so you guys have something that kind of looks like a Space Needle, but isn't a Space Needle?
Well, yes. I mean, sort of. We have what's called the Revolving Restaurant. I believe that's what you're referring to, and it's a restaurant that's kind of like in the sky at the top of the building, but it doesn't have a needle on it. It's not an actual Space Needle, but we have a really cool Science World.
Science World?
Yeah, we have a really cool big Science World that has a big IMAX theater in it and everything.
Space Needle, that's crazy.
So you know, we have rotating exhibits every few months. We got a lot of art galleries too, if you guys are into art.
Definitely art.
There's a lot of cool stuff, but no, Seattle will still lay claim to the only Space Needle.
The revolving restaurant sounds very cool. I would love to check that out.
Yes. It's part of the yes. Well, it's pretty close to downtown, so it's not super far from where you're playing your show.
All right. Very cool. Do you know if they have a minimum?
I don't. Actually, I've only been there
The Space Needle has a minimum. You have to spend a certain amount of money on your meal there to go up there.
Oh, I haven't heard that to be the case with the revolving restaurant, but don't quote me on it. But yeah, let's talk about this album that you guys are currently touring, NVM. Ooh. Yeah. How would you guys describe your writing process for the band? Do you guys all write together? Do you all write separately?
We write together and separately. I don't know. Like usually we kind of like have like just an idea, a small idea, like a small part, and Lila Brie and I will work together and kind of work it out into a song. And then Emily is always, we're always kind of coming up with things to write about and some, Emily was always writing like lyrics here and there. And then she, then we kind of put it all together.
Yep.
Everyone kind of does their own.
We record a lot of demos on our phone without lyrics or anything, send them to Emily. And then she gets ideas based on how they make her feel. I assume not Emily, but...
I gotta say I just had the chance to watch a couple of your videos for both Crimson Wave and Hey Girl. I love the style in which the videos are made. Where did those come from for you guys?
Crimson Wave was our friend Marcy Stone Francois is the person who made that with us, and she just sort of put together a concept for that, and we kind of collaborated on, like, oh, yeah, that would be cool to just... We basically just had a bunch of ideas about beach themes and kind of just got all of our friends there into a freezing cold warehouse in the middle of winter, but it looks like it's summer.
What you don't see is that between takes, like, everyone is huddled around one space heater because it was actually freezing cold.
We're in our swimsuits, and then we're wrapped up in blankets when we're not shooting.
That reminds me of a...
Eric. Yeah, my friend Eric Olson and I wanted to do an animation, and
nice.
His first shot of it was amazing. Yeah, he just did that, like, we didn't commission it or anything. He was
we didn't commission it.
He was really excited to do something like that. He had never, like, done animation. And it looks amazing.
You guys, in certain articles I've read about you, have been called, satirical feminists. But do you worry that, like, people who have never seen a Taco Cat show before and don't really know about you guys won't understand the parody style of your lyrics? Do you worry that what you're singing about can be taken the wrong way by certain people?
Constantly gets taken the wrong way.
I wouldn't say I'm worried about it.
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. Like, yeah.
If you get it, then that's cool.
If you don't have a sense of humor, then
it's fine. Fair enough.
Does it get taken the wrong way? I mean, that's what satire is sometimes.
Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes people are just not going to get it, and those are not our audience. That really kind of weeds them out for us.
Well, I'm curious, given the conversations right now that are happening in the U.S. about feminism or just all the political craziness that's going on, are you guys taking a lot of inspiration from that right now?
I mean, it feels really amazing to finally feel like there's sort of an uprising, or that we're not, like,
going against the grain still. Because I think when we first started, it was very not the norm to be a quote-unquote, like, fun girl band, or be, like, you know, be addressing these issues or talking about things like your period. There's stuff that people, I think, still, like, 8 years ago were just kind of like, what? Ew, what? But now it's, yes, it's cool, but it's just, like, you know, feels good to have that happening, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like, before it seemed like when, that, like, there were women making music, you were, like, you were either a feminist band and you were angry, or you were, like, Katy Perry and, like, being overly sexualized. And,
yeah.
And, like, if you were fun, you were also probably, yeah, being overly sexualized. I feel like maybe we've helped bridge the gap.
Yeah, totally.
Well, it's interesting because I read somewhere that you guys initially bonded over Riot Girl and your love of Waterworld. Is that true?
That's basically true. So there's just a couple of the things that we had many bondings of.
Yeah. Water.
What was
Waterworld.
It? What, I mean,
probably the season.
Waterworld is such a, you know, derided film in a lot of circles. Why did you guys feel strongly about that movie?
Well, I don't think it's as bad as everyone says it was, you know. It was like a big flop. I don't know, it's just like a very fun, it's a fun movie to watch.
We haven't seen it in years. Maybe we should watch Waterworld together.
Yeah.
Again.
There you go.
Time for, what do you call that, like, a return?
Return to Waterworld.
It's just like every 7 years, every cell in your body is renewed.
Yeah,
we have to rewatch Waterworld since it's left.
seeing it through a new body or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, you know, or seeing it in a new light. The ultimate throwback Thursday or something.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right.
I also really Face Off lately. I want to watch Face Off again.
I want to watch Face Off too, and Con
Air. I've never seen Con Air.
What?
I know. Sorry, we've derailed.
A Nicolas Cage movie night. No. Do you guys think you could do an anti-Trump song or an anti-Trump album, or is he just too far gone already that it's not even worth it?
I'm not entirely sure it's worth it.
No, he's not. I just want to pretend he doesn't exist.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't we all, trust me, up here in Canada, we're like, please, please do not elect this man.
Right?
Like,
there's no way it'll happen. It's ridiculous. It's kind of like a fun spectacle every day to, like,
I don't know if fun is the word, but
haven't you had a laugh or two?
I guess for every laugh, I'm, like, equally scared.
Yeah.
I would say.
I'm not scared.
But, well,
I'm scared.
I mean, his politics are made to divide.
I just don't. Have you heard any positive Trump things? I mean, really?
Well,
we live in Seattle.
You live in a bubble. You live in a bubble.
All right. I want to hear the positive points.
The real bubble is real, and it's that.
The positive points will scare you. If you ran into Trump supporters, you would be scared.
Well, I want to stay. I want to remain fearless. I have no Trump fear. I'm not going to educate myself.
Fair enough. So this little tour that you guys are on right now, what do you enjoy most about the touring life?
I really like meeting new people in every city, or like the people, which is, you know, what you would expect, but there's something really real about, it's like not vacation quite, and it's not just going to like the main parts of any town, it's like going to different neighborhoods where real local people are, and like getting in a conversation with someone in New Mexico about like how they feel about the politics of this one part of their town, and but last time we were in Canada, actually had a really great conversation with someone about like your thoughts, or the Canada's like thoughts on GMOs, and how like
all these different ideas that, like, the United States doesn't have. Just everywhere you go, it's like crazy conversations with people that you would never... You can't really read it on the internet in the same way. You can't really, like, glean that when you're just vacationing somewhere. It's, like, a really cool view of every different part of the region. And we've been to, like, you know, 45 or 6 states.
Yeah.
Canada, Europe, like...
Yeah,
it's an exercise in going with the flow too. Like every day, you're in somewhat of a routine of driving and playing, but at the same time, like everything is new every day, and everything is different every day.
Yeah, so it's a real adventure. You really never know what you're gonna get.
What do you like about Canada?
I like your different candies I see at the gas station that I'm not getting when I'm in the U.S. And different chips are nice, too. There's a good... the difference in snacks is cool.
We also love Nardwar, and we really hope that he gets...
Yeah,
makes a full recovery. We are very sad.
Yeah.
Yes, he is recovering at the moment. They think he's going to be okay, but he's currently still in the hospital, as far as I know.
I was going to say I was excited to go to Vancouver because of Nardwar, but then I was like thinking we could invite him to our show, and then I was so sad to hear.
Yeah. Maybe we can visit him. Maybe we can bring him a basket of tacos.
There you go.
That's such a good idea.
If anyone knows what we can do to help Nardwar, we'll do it.
Yeah.
Well, he's a Canadian treasure.
Yes, yeah. I will pass that message along for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Because I happen to be at CITR right now. You guys are from Seattle, and Seattle has probably one of the best music scenes of any city in the world. What do you guys enjoy about the Seattle music scene?
A lot of cool ladies in it. A lot of cool people. Just like really, there's a lot of camaraderie in it.
It's really 180'd in the last, like, 10 years since we started.
Yeah.
Since we were all, like, started to get involved in the music scene. And,
oh, yeah, for sure.
Like, it's just become a more, collective, like, positive.
Positive and, like, actually creative instead of just kind of, like, here's a music. I don't know.
Here's the music, yeah.
I feel like it's actually inspired and, like, interesting.
Hip-hop, there's really, really good, like, jazz. There's good, so much good punk and stuff, of course. But, yeah, I'm really proud of everybody in the scene, like, all the different scenes in Seattle. I think it's a really rad place to be right now and has been for the last couple years.
Well, yeah. Well, the album is NVM, and you guys are here on Saturday, December 12th at the Cobalt. Taco Cat, thank you so much, guys.
Hey, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
We'll see you there?
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully.
Okay, hopefully. I'll take it.
Alrighty. Ciao. Bye. Thank you.
That was my conversation with Emily, Bree, Leela, and Eric from Taco Cat. And at the end there, you heard their song, Stereogram. Well, just before the new year came to an end, we lost three great musicians. In Vancouver, we lost a bit of an icon. The king of big band, Dal Richards, passed away on New Year's Eve. The same day, the world also lost great singer Natalie Cole. But perhaps no loss in the music community was felt as much as that of Lemmy from Motorhead. Now, I'll admit that growing up, Motorhead was not a band that I would consider to have a great impact on my childhood. You know, in my teen years, I was into like Green Day and Queen and those types of bands. But I remember working a Motorhead show a number of years ago when I first moved to Vancouver and was working as a theater usher. And it was one of the most stunning shows I've ever seen, just from an energy standpoint, looking at both the band and then also the people in the audience taking it in. There was a certain vibe that I don't think I've ever come across since. And you come to realize and respect just what Lemmy and Motorhead did for music. It's funny, with the new Element 113 being discovered, because it was a heavy metal element, there's a petition to name it after Lemmy. I guess that would be Camisterium, if you go by last names. But Lemmy never considered Motorhead a heavy metal band. They were a rock band, and in many ways, I would agree. So we're gonna end the show tonight again with the classic Motorhead song, Ace of Spades. Just remember that you can follow me on Twitter at Endeavors Radio. You can follow my co-producer on Lehman on Twitter at Lehman, L-E-A-M-I-N-N. You can follow her on Instagram at Insta_Lehman or me on Instagram at Endeavors Radio. You can find us on Facebook at Pods with Benefits. Or you can visit our website at podswithbenefits.com. Be also sure to check out my blog, wildthing.org. If you like the show, please consider giving a donation. We would really appreciate it. This show goes out to Lemmy and Dahl and Natalie Cole, and also to a good friend back home. We just got engaged, Miss Britt Benbow. I'll see you soon. This is Motorhead with Ace of Spades. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Bye.
that's the way I like it, baby. I don't wanna live forever.